glider. One member of Discovery's original crew isn't along for the ride. Japanese astronaut Koichi Wakata is remaining aboard the International Space Station as its newest full-time crew member.
My first impression is the space station interior is so big, and I would love to stay here as long as I can. And I'm so glad to be already being able to work with the European Space Agency experiments and then Japanese experiments.
The weather looks favorable for tomorrow's planned landing in Florida, so much so that NASA isn't planning on opening the backup runway in California on Saturday or Sunday. For NPR News, I'm Pat Duggins in Orlando.
An update from Wall Street. Dow's now down 88 points. NASDAQ down 18 at 1569. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible by the Friends of WILL and by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their new location at Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, hour number two of the program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls. Once again this morning, we're going to the Focus Archives for a program that we first broadcast in January. That was on January 15th. So in this hour of Focus, do keep in mind as you listen that we'll not be taking calls. One of the bloodiest battles of the Vietnam War took place in November 1965 in the Yadrang Valley. In 1992, journalists Joseph Galloway and General Harold Moore told the story of that battle in their book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young. And this is a book that a lot of people have said they think is perhaps the best book, certainly one of the best books written about Vietnam. Now they have produced a new book that's a sequel to that book, and it's based on a return visit to the site of that battle and their meetings with some of the men that they fought against. The title of this newly published book is We Are Soldiers Still, A Journey Back to the Battlefields of Vietnam. Harper is the publisher on the book. And let me tell you just a little bit more about the authors. General Moore, Lieutenant General Harold Moore, he served in Korea. He was a battalion and brigade commander in Vietnam. He retired from the Army in 1977 with 32 years of service. Our guest this morning, Joseph Galloway, is the author of a weekly syndicated column on military and national security affairs. He recently retired as senior military correspondent of Knight Ridder newspapers. He was a special consultant to General Colin Powell at the State Department in 2001 and 2002. He spent 22 years as a foreign and war correspondent and bureau chief for United Press International, and nearly 20 years as a senior editor and senior writer for U.S. News and World Report. Mr. Galloway, hello.
Hello. How are you, Dave?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Very good.
Good. I appreciate you giving us some of your time. Certainly, you have a lot of experience covering conflict. You reported from Iraq, you reported on the Gulf Wars, and a lot of others going back to Vietnam. Did you set out to be a war correspondent, or did this just kind of happen to you?
Well, more or less kind of happened after the first experiences in Vietnam. I was covering politics in the great state of Kansas in 1961, 2, 3, 4, and somewhere in there I sort of started noticing things were happening in a place called Saigon in Vietnam, and I thought there's a good chance that this may be my generation's war, and if we were to have one, I wanted to cover it. As a kid, I'd read the collected works of Ernie Pyle, the great Midwestern journalist who covered World War II so beautifully. And I thought, if there's going to be a war for my generation, I want to cover it, and I'd like to cover it the way Ernie Pyle covered his generation's war.
Mm-hmm.
So I set out to get myself transferred from Topeka, Kansas to Saigon. And it took me a year or so, but I managed to make it.
Well, just to start out, talk about this fight, this battle that took place in November, these 2 days, November 1965.
Well, 3 days and two nights, November 14th, 15th, 16th of 1965. It was a historic fight, a collision between probably the two finest light infantry forces in the world at that time. The 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile, a new unit, experimental, equipped with 435 helicopters, and the North Vietnamese People's Army. And they sent the better part of a division down the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and they had an ambitious plan to cut South Vietnam in two, beginning with this battle. And the one thing that got in their way was a gutsy lieutenant colonel out of Bardstown, Kentucky, named Hal Moore, a 1945 West Point graduate. And his battalion of about 450 men. Mm-hmm. And he was sent with his men out 15 miles from the nearest dirt road into an area where no one in previous battles and campaigns had ever gone, an area that was the terminus, southern terminus of the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and a very remote, rugged area in the Yadrang Valley. And he airlifted his men in there, and they got into a fight, and it turned into just a cliffhanger battle for survival.
And it sounds as if the mission here, it wasn't as if this place per se had great strategic significance. What this all about was engaging the enemy and hitting him as hard as you possibly could.
That's correct. That was the commander in Vietnam of American forces, General William Westmoreland, had decided that the way to go about this war was what you might call a strategy of attrition, that we would kill so many more of them than they could kill of us that we would wear them out. Some might call that foolish. It certainly didn't work very well. In the battle at hand in the Adrang at a place called Landing Zone X-Ray, just a clearing at the base of a mountain, no bigger than a football field, we found ourselves surrounded by 2,000-plus very good enemy soldiers who were determined to kill us all.
Did the U.S. commanders here know the strength of the enemy? Were they aware of the situation that they were putting themselves into?
The orders were to find the enemy and kill him. And the intelligence was that there might be a regiment of North Vietnamese, let's say 1,000 men, in that area, but they weren't sure where. And as it happened, Colonel Moore and his troops landed right smack in the middle, right on top of them.
Mm-hmm. Casualties on both sides were quite heavy, more so on the Vietnamese side than on the American side. Do I have this right that for a single battle that this was the heaviest, the largest number of American soldiers killed?
In the whole war, 305 Americans died in the matter of 4 or 5 days, two battles 2 miles apart. And the Vietnamese suffered in this campaign somewhere between 2,000 and 5,000 casualties. And at times, the Americans on the ground were surrounded by forces 10 times larger than they were. And so it was a very close-run thing, and it could be said that Landing Zone X-Ray was a victory for the Americans in that we did survive. But, in a meat grinder battle like that, there no one is a winner.
Mm-hmm. There's a point here where the story is being told in the voice in the book. The story is essentially being told in the voice of General Moore. He wasn't a general at that time, but he was talking about how he was there, and they were getting really serious fire from the North Vietnamese, and then at one point they were going to send in some helicopters to bring in some supplies and bring in some more ammunition. And somebody said, you know, there's this guy, Galloway, there's this reporter who wants to come in here. Should we let him? And and he said something like, if he wants to come, okay. You probably had, did you have any idea what you were getting into?
Well, actually I did. By then I'd been in Vietnam for 7 months since the first Marines had landed north of there, and I had covered every operation the Marines had made, and I had come to the Central Highlands after I heard about this new Army unit, which had so many helicopters, and I thought, I've been walking to work for 7 months now with the Marines. Here I have a chance. I will ride to work. And it's a different country. It's up in the mountains. It's cooler. So I thought this was a good move to shift my operations to the Central Highlands. And I had marched with Colonel Moore's battalion 3 days before this battle broke out. And they had gotten a look at me, and I had gotten a look at them, and so things fell together, and I had flown over this battle in its very first minutes with the brigade commander, Colonel Tim Brown, from a rear area. He was going to land there and drop me off, and we got there, and it was so hot. There was so much fighting that there was no way to land that helicopter. And he dropped me off at an artillery fire base about 5 miles away. And there were probably five or six journalists there, including my nemesis. I then worked for United Press International News Agency. And there was Peter Arnett of the Associated Press, my competitor, was there, and several others, and we were all trying to get in to cover this fight. And I got lucky because I knew the battalion, and I'd met Colonel Moore, and I spotted his operations officer at this firebase, and pulled him to the side and said, I need to get in there. And he said, well, I'm going in as soon as it's dark with two helicopters full of ammo, but I can't take you unless the old man says so. And I said, well, you get the colonel on the radio and ask him. And he had to make a report anyway and tell him about the two helicopters full of ammunition. And he said, oh, by the way, this reporter Galloway's here, and he wants to come with us. And I was standing right by the radio, and over the sound of battle in the background, Colonel Moore said, if he's crazy enough to want to come in here and you've got room, bring him along. So I had my ticket to ride, and I knew full well that I was going into a bad situation. But that was my job.
Let me introduce again our guest for this hour, Joe Galloway. He recently retired as senior military correspondent of Knight Ridder Newspapers. He spent 22 years as foreign and war correspondent and bureau chief for United Press International, nearly 20 years as a senior editor and senior writer for U.S. News and World Report, covered the Vietnam War. He's the co-author, along with General Harold Moore, of really two books. The earlier book that I mentioned, We Were Soldiers Once and Young, is the story about this particular battle that we've been talking about, Battle of Ya Drang, that took place in November 1965. And now they have produced a new book based on some of their experiences going back to Vietnam, going back to the site of the battle, and meeting with people who fought on the other side, people who fought for Vietnam. This book is titled We Are Soldiers Still, A Journey Back to the Battlefields of Vietnam, and it is published by Harper. Questions are welcome. In fact, we have someone who is standing by. I will not make them wait any longer. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And we have a caller here in Spring Bay on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I went to see the Mel Gibson movie years ago, and when I went to see the movie, it was like, okay, this is going to be a great popcorn movie, action adventure, this will be good. And I was really very moved by the film and the story. And eventually, I ended up watching it a couple more times, I guess probably over the next year. I kept thinking about it. And then I went out and bought your book. And just an absolutely amazing story. And your book was so well done. And it was just, it's been a very meaningful experience for me. So I just wanted to call in and express that to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, other calls, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I certainly want to get onto the story of your going back to Vietnam, but just to talk a little bit more about what happened in the battle and your involvement. I'm sure that, I guess, people have the idea that the reporters are there just to observe, and the idea is that you're supposed to just stand back and watch the action. But, of course, if you're in the middle of a battle, that's you're in the battle. In the same way that the soldiers are in the battle, even though you weren't there as a combatant. One thing I definitely want to mention, I wouldn't expect it, you probably would brag on yourself, but in fact, you were decorated for rescuing some wounded soldiers during that battle, and in fact, you were awarded the Bronze Star. And in fact, I think the Army only gave one Bronze Star to a civilian during the Vietnam War, and that was you.
That's correct. I don't brag on it, but I wear that lapel pin with a great deal of pride, more in honor of the 70-plus American journalists who died trying to tell the story to the American people during that war. They're my friends, the friends of my youth, and I only did what I thought I had to do during that battle, which was, one, take good notes, two, take the best pictures I could. I'm not a photographer by training, but we all carried a camera in those days. And three, try to survive that battle so that I could tell the story. Hmm. And four, when you're presented with circumstances such as occurred on that second morning when an American Air Force jet fighter dropped two cans of napalm right in the middle of us and went over our heads, in fact, exploded 20 yards away. All I could think was, I'm looking and I can see a couple of three American soldiers dancing in the fire. And I don't know, instinct took over. I jumped up, a medic jumped up across the way. We both ran toward the fire and those burning men. And the medic Mike was shot by a sniper and killed. And I got in there and pulled one of these men out and carried him back to the where the doctor was operating, and that's it. You just you don't think about something like that. You just do it.
You talk in the book about the fact that going back to I'm not sure when you maybe you first talked with General Moore about going back. Maybe this was in sometime in the early 90s. That he was really determined to go back to Yadrang to be able to stand on that place again, stand there now in the present, and that you certainly wanted to go along and be part of this. And part of the story is the book is how over a period of time you worked on this and you made a couple of trips, and the government of Vietnam continued to say no until they finally said yes, and I suppose we can talk about why. But this all gets to the question, given how horrific, my word, how it must have been to be in this, why he, General Moore, you, other people, and I know other people, you know, other people who have served in Vietnam have done this kind of thing, why you would want to go back?
Well, you... you know, I'll tell you that General Moore, the first day we sat down and began planning the research of this book in 1982, on that day we talked about what each of us wanted for this book and for ourselves. And from that very beginning, he said, look, I want to go back to Vietnam. I want to talk to those who commanded on the other side. I want to go back to that battlefield. I have to go back. I want to walk that ground, and I want to stay the night. And I want to, basically, he said, I want to commune with the souls of the soldiers who died there. He had lost 79 of his precious men, and they weighed heavily on his mind and heart, and it was something he just had to do. And at the time, I said, sir, you know, our chances of getting back to Vietnam aren't all that good, and the chance of getting back to that battlefield, which sits, you know, 5 miles from the Cambodian border, and they were having trouble with the Khmer Rouge raiding into that area, I said, there's almost no chance at all. And he just nodded and said, well, that's what I want. And so that was his dream. During 10 years of our research that led to publication of We Were Soldiers in 1992, mm-hmm. And we had gone back twice for talking to the enemy commanders for that book. But it was not until the book was actually published, the Vietnamese generals translated it into Vietnamese, they read it, they decided that we were what we said we were, that we had no axe to grind. What we wanted was the truth of the battle, and we wanted it from both sides. It's, you know, most of military history is one-sided. The victor gets to write the history, and we always knew that we wanted their words of what it looked like on their side. And we pushed and pushed for that, and we got that for the book. But we were stymied. They wouldn't let us go back to the battlefield. It is just too sensitive an area in their view. And they didn't trust us. They didn't know really what our agenda was, especially the general. They understood reporters, and I could get in pretty easily, but the general was a puzzle to them. And after they had read the book, they said, okay, we'll take you back there. and we'll come with you. And they agreed to this. An ABC documentary film crew and correspondent Forrest Sawyer came with us to do a documentary on this journey, and so we were off and running. That's kind of how that happened. Mm-hmm. And it happened in late 1993, and we're just now getting around to writing the story of that remarkable journey in the new book, We Are Soldiers Still. But it's something that you never forget.
Let me just real quickly, as we're at our midpoint, introduce again our guest, Joe Galloway. He just recently retired as senior military correspondent of Knight Ridder Newspapers. He spent 22 years as foreign and war correspondent and bureau chief for United Press International, nearly 20 years as senior editor and senior writer for U.S. News and World Report. He reported on Iraq in 2003 and in 2005-2006 on the U.S. occupation of Haiti, on both Desert Shield and Desert Storm, on Indonesia's invasion of Portuguese Timor. He also reported on the India-Pakistan War in 1971, and also he had four tours as a war correspondent in Vietnam. And he is the co-author, along with Lieutenant General Harold Moore, of these two books that we mentioned, the one that came out in 1992 that was, in fact, provided the basis and inspiration for a movie. That book was We Were Soldiers Once and Young, and now there's a book that's intended really very much to be a sequel that's titled We Are Soldiers Still, A Journey Back to the Battlefields of Vietnam. Harper is the publisher on the book, and it indeed tells the story, as he has explained, of the effort, his effort and General Moore's effort to go back to the site of the battle, to be able to see it, and to stand there, and also to talk, to meet and talk with the people who fought on the other side, the people who fought for the North Vietnamese. Questions, comments, welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So after the Vietnamese finally said, okay, you can go and we'll take you there and we'll go with you, as a result, I think it's an interesting part of the story that it was after they read the first book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young, was translated into Vietnamese, that they had some sense about what you, and particularly what General Moore was all about. They said, okay, we'll go. Even then, this is an extremely remote area. It's not easy to get to. What was the trip like getting there?
Well, we started in Hanoi. We met with General Giap, the supreme commander of North Vietnamese forces throughout the war, and really throughout the history of Vietnam, their war with the Japanese, the French, the Americans. Later, they fought the Cambodians and the Chinese after we were gone. We met the generals on the other side, the colonels, some of the survivors of the battle. We took along about 10 American veterans of the battle with us. And as said, the ABC film crew. And we flew south to Da Nang, and they put us on mini buses, and we headed south, an all-day trip along the coast road. Boy, talk about memories. Every place you drove through had one for us. My Lai, various American bases along the way that were now no longer. The old Marine base at Chu Lai, which was a big airfield, had been plowed under and turned back to sand dunes. And we were seeing Vietnam for the first time, not as a war, but as a country. And we were being made well aware of the fact that at that time, 65% of the population of Vietnam had been born since our war there ended. So it was ancient history for them, and treated pretty much the way that the Vietnam War is treated in history textbooks for high school sophomores in America. You get about three or four paragraphs, and you move on to something else. So it was an eye opener, and it took us about 3 days to get into position where a chartered old Soviet-made Hind helicopter was going to fly us into the valley in two lifts out of Pleiku, the capital of the Highlands, and that was the real beginning of the journey. But what we had hoped to do, and especially with the new book, the first book was definitely a war book. It was intense. It was totally centered on the combat and the men on both sides. And what we wanted to do with this book we just published was that was the war. We wanted to write an end to that war, which still lives on in the memories of 3 million Americans who served in the Indochina Theater during the 10 years of our war there, and for ourselves, find something that would give us peace.
Clearly, you talk in this book about how this war left its mark on you, and certainly it's left its mark on everybody who served there. And you talked about particularly the interest of the general, of General Moore, of going back to this place for a variety of reasons. For you, if you think now back to your going back to this place where you were there, saw the battle, were involved in it, right in the middle of it, as a reporter, and there, because you were in the middle of it, there was no escape. So in some sense, there's maybe not a whole lot of difference between your experience and their experience. For you, being able to go and stand on that place all those years later, what did it mean for you?
Oh, I'm not sure I can say that it meant closing the circle, closing the loop, whatever the latest psychobabble term is for getting over something, because that was an experience that slowly I came to realize through the years that you don't get over something like that. You learn to live with the memories and the nightmares. And to me, it was a chance to go there and see a country and a people and a land at peace, whereas I had known it off and on for 10 years only as a place of great danger, great suffering, people dying all around, people being wounded, people being killed right next to me. And for me, it was a chance just to see it through different eyes in a different time, in a time of peace. And to me, it was a chance to put an end to a war that has haunted a generation of Americans and has haunted our foreign policy, our politics, and, you know, it's strange to me that after World War II, 7 years later, and that war, our enemies were responsible for the deaths of 60 million human beings. 7 years later, we signed peace treaties with Germany and Japan, and the war was over, and they were now our friends and allies and have remained so. And yet, decades after the end of the Vietnam War, we were not able to do the same with the Vietnamese. And the difference is, of course, that they won and we lost, and we're not very good losers when it comes to war. We Americans, we've not experienced that much. We've had a tie or two here and there, Korea being one, and Vietnam being a loss. And it was something, it seemed to me, that we had to deal with, that we should deal with, because they've moved on, the Vietnamese. They've whether you like it or not, they have a system. They're still a communist government and a party that runs things, but they have been tempered much as China has by the realities of the world and world trade. We do $10 billion a year two-way trade with the Vietnamese. Interestingly, their big neighbor China, which has fought seven or eight wars with Vietnam over 1,000 years' time, they have a $10 billion two-way trade as well with Vietnam. So it was an attempt to say to the American people that the war is over. It's done. Vietnam has moved on. So should we.
We have some callers to talk with. We are also moving into about our last 15 minutes. Just, again, for anybody who might have tuned in, I want to introduce our guest, Joe Galloway. He's a reporter, has a lot of experience as a foreign and war correspondent, worked for UPI, and also U.S. News and World Report, recently retired as senior military correspondent of Knight Ridder Newspapers. And he's the author, co-author of the book, We Are Soldiers Still, A Journey Back to the Battlefields of Vietnam. It's intended to be a kind of a sequel to an earlier book, We Were Soldiers Once and Young, which tells the story of this battle that took place in the Yadrong Valley in the fall of 1965. A lot of people think that's one of the best books written about the Vietnam War. We have a couple of callers here, and let's talk with them. Effingham is up next, line 4. Hello.
Yes, thank you. In either of your books, do you mention the Phoenix Project?
Well, our book, we're talking 1965, the first year of the American part of the war. And our Operation Phoenix had not really begun at that time. And our focus was on a single campaign or battle in the Yadrang Valley. We didn't try in our book to talk about the politics of the war. We didn't try to talk about what was happening in the north or in Saigon or other areas. We had our focus on that which we had experienced firsthand, this battle, which was the first major battle of the war. So we did not go into things like Operation Phoenix. Gosh, there are any number of books out on that. What we wanted with our book was to tell the story of one battle so thoroughly and completely from both sides that it would stand as a thank you to the soldiers, the young soldiers from the United States, many of them draftees, who went there, did their duty, fought in a terrible war, and came home to not much respect and not anybody saying thank you for your service. Thank you for going there and doing as you were ordered, the best you could. And so we wanted that more than anything else, to give some peace to the veterans of that war and we weren't out to tell the history of Vietnam, although we do get into that a little bit. So that's pretty much what we set out to do, and as a matter of healing, not only for we who survived that battle, but for all of those who served there under our flag, and to try to heal some divisions in the country over that war that had lingered for years and years and years.
All right. Our first caller, I think, would like to just ask a quick follow-up, so we'll talk again to this gentleman in Spring Bay on line one. Hello.
Thanks, David, for taking my call the second time.
That's fine.
It didn't seem like there were a lot of calls, so I had another question. First of all, how did you feel about the movie's representation of the events and your story? Did you think it was successful? And then secondly, Colonel Moore seems to have been a man who had prepared himself for that situation, although he couldn't prepare himself for that particular battle, but he came across as highly competent, well-trained, a remarkable commander, and perhaps if those men had been under someone else's command at that time, they might not have gotten out of that situation. If you could comment on his command ability, I'd appreciate it, and I'll get off and listen. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. That's two questions. The first about the movie. The movie is, in my judgment, 75% reality based on the book and 25% Hollywood BS, which I hasten to say is the reverse of normal for folks on that coast in that business. So we were, at the same time, pleased that they got as much right as they did, that mainly they got the spirit of the thing right. And two, disappointed that we couldn't persuade them to stick to reality on the other 25% where they decided that Hollywood would rule. So on balance, it's one of the few Vietnam movies that I have not gotten up and walked out on in disgust. So I give them high marks on it. I really do. They did a good job. And your second question about General Hal Moore as a commander at every level in his career. Quite simply, you know, I spent 43 years covering Americans at war, 50 years this year as a journalist, a reporter, a writer, an editor. And Hal Moore is quite simply the finest battlefield commander I have ever met, and I've met them all in that time. I've marched with or ridden with Norm Schwarzkopf, General Barry McCaffrey, on and on and on. And yet, as a battlefield commander, Hal Moore was as good as it ever gets. He's recently, someone named him to the list of the 100 greatest generals in the history of the world. Interestingly, they also recently, an article in Military History magazine chose 50 historians to select the 10 greatest books ever written on war, and I'm proud to say that We Were Soldiers Once and Young made the cut, along with the Iliad, the Peloponnesian Wars, War and Peace, the Red Badge of Courage, Clausewitz, Grant's memoirs. So the general, as a battlefield commander, was very smart, very wily. He had some principles that he had developed and nurtured over his years in West Point and as a company commander on Pork Chop Hill in Korea. Old Baldy, he fought there. And then into Vietnam. On the boat going to Vietnam, he had a box of books he was reading voraciously about the French experience in Vietnam. He was reading Bernard Fall's books, Street Without Joy, Hell in a Very Small Place. Everything he could get his hands on, he wanted to know who his enemy was, how he thought, how he acted, and there's no question in my mind that a lesser commander been in charge in that valley, in that battle, I wouldn't be sitting here comfortable in my home talking to you over the radio. I and every other man in there would have died.
All right, let's talk with another caller when we still have timeline two in Champaign. Hello.
Yes, thank you. I want to commend you for trying to see things also from the perspective of the Vietnamese. I think it's very important that we Americans learn to, see ourselves and our foreign policy from the perspective of those who are on the receiving end of it. I think if we did, we would stop supporting wars of aggression like the Philippines and Vietnam and today in Iraq. It's very different when, you're the ones who are, being attacked. And I just think that, our history is not very well taught in this country. I know what I learned when I was in school and what a lot of people learn today. And it's just very different from, I think, the way, others in the world see our foreign policy. Thank you.
All right. Well, Mr. Galloway, you comment on that, however you like.
I have to agree with a good bit of what he says. I've often counseled in my speeches to military audiences the importance of studying the history, the culture, the language of those that you would go and fight. Otherwise, you're tying one of your hands behind you and you're blinding one of your eyes. I think if we had done a very careful historical study of the Vietnamese, we would never have intervened in their civil war. There are people with the bark on them. They had been at war with China for 1,000 years and more. We went at the suggestion of General Giap to the Museum of Natural History in Hanoi on our first trip to look at a timeline of Vietnam's history. And it was a mural on a wall that was probably 40 yards long. And it was both a map and a timeline. And what you see are these red arrows coming down from China. They would come, they would take Vietnam. They would hold it, sometimes for hundreds of years, but eventually they would be driven out at great cost of life in a terrible war. And then, bang, here they would come again 50 or 100 years later and once again be driven out. 6 times they invaded Vietnam, and 6 times they were driven out. And that occupies, let's say, 39 yards of the 40-yard mural. And then there's the French 100 years of colonial occupation of Vietnam, and that occupies most of the other yard. And then there's the American War, our 10 years, and it occupies a couple of 3 inches on that map, and it puts it all very much in perspective. And I think if you thought about that, if you had studied their history, you would realize this is a bad neighborhood to go intervening in as a foreign power. I think if similar studies had been made of of the history of Iraq, we would realize that that's a murderous neighborhood, and no good can come of it. Just like Afghanistan, if you think you're doing the right thing going in there, ask Alexander the Great, ask Queen Victoria, ask Leonid Brezhnev of the late Soviet Union. We need to be smarter about the world we live in. And unfortunately, our educational system seems to be making each succeeding generation a little dumber about the history of the world and a little dumber about who we elect as our leaders.
You know, I wish we had a lot more time. Unfortunately, we have about a minute or two. One thing that we haven't talked about is the meetings between General Moore and the men who fought on the other side. And not to say that those meetings maybe were easy, but what is very striking is that the way that they managed to come together, I want to say as comrades, and I don't know if that's exactly the right way to talk about it, but that you certainly didn't see the kind of animosity that maybe you might have expected from people who had been trying to kill each other at one time.
That's absolutely correct. We were days on those little buses, each of us with one of the Vietnamese officers as our seatmate. General Moore had General An, the commander on the other side, sitting with him, and they were comparing notes about their careers as soldiers, and they were remarkably similar, different but similar. At every step of their career. And, they ended up at the end of the whole thing out on that battlefield. General Moore called us all together at the end of the day in a circle with our arms around each other, Vietnamese and American veterans of this battle. And together we prayed for the souls of all who died in that place, on both sides. And those two, General Moore and General An, walked away new friends. They had gone from being old enemies to being new friends. And my seatmate on the bus was Colonel Took. And after we had talked for a few days, one day he called the translator over, and he thumped me on the chest with his finger. He said, "You have the heart of a soldier. It's the same heart that beats in my chest. I'm so glad I didn't kill you."
Well, there, we've got to stop. Our guest, Joe Galloway, has a lot of experience as a foreign and war correspondent, worked for UPI, U.S. News and World Report, recently retired as senior military correspondent of Knight Ridder newspaper. He's the co-author, along with Lieutenant General Harold Moore, of the book We Are Soldiers Still, A Journey Back to the Battlefields of Vietnam. It's published by Harper. Mr. Galloway, thanks very much for talking with us.
My pleasure, David. Let's do it again sometime.
And this program came from the Focus 580 archives. The show was originally broadcast on January 15th. Our program, Focus 580, supported in part by Bodywork Associates, offering professional licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982, now with four area locations, including inside the new Activities and Recreation Center north of Memorial Stadium on the U of I campus. More information at bodyworkassociates.com. Programs also made possible by the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts coming April 14th. Experience the National Philharmonic of Russia with featured soloist Deimos Matsuyev. More information at KrannertCenter.com. That's it for us here on Focus. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll take a look at the life of Abraham Lincoln through the lens of language and literature. We'll rebroadcast an interview with author Fred Kaplan, his most recent book, Lincoln, The Biography of a Writer. That's at 106 this afternoon. Let's take a look now at commodity prices in Kansas City. May wheat, 552 down 8. July, 563 down 7 and 3 quarters. Chicago May wheat, 508 and a half down 6. July, 522 and a half down 4 and a half. May corn, 388, down 2 3/4. July, 398 and a quarter, down 3. September, 406 and 3/4, down 3 3/4. December, 420 and a half, down 2 1/4. May beans, 928, down 16. July, 927, down 13 and a half. August, 907, down 17. September, 881, down 12. May meal, 286.50, down 4.30. May oil, 32.90, down 70. Livestock contracts now. April live cattle, 84.